Last month, we discussed legislation seeking to put more onus on insurance companies to find out what they need to know about policy applicants rather than the applicant. Since then, the government's announced it's picking up much of what was in the Labor MP Duncan Webb's members' bill, which we were discussing, and taking it on as a government bill, making it more likely to have the numbers to pass. For years, the insurance ombudsman's fielded complaints from people who've been paying for health or income protection insurance or contents or home insurance, and when they came to claim, they were declined because the company said they'd failed to disclose information a prudent insurer, quote-unquote, ought to know. That's the legal test the ombudsman years ago signalled it ought to change, with more of an onus being placed on insurers. The Insurance Ombudsman, Karen Stevens, is back with us this morning, and thanks for that. Good morning.
Morena, Catherine, how are you?
I'm good, in part good. To discuss this new bill, and also because you had so many questions after that interview we wanted the chance to put to her. So send those questions in now. We have some from last time. This is to do with the game, if you like, when perhaps that's the wrong word, the relationship between insurance policyholder and provider, knowing what information is essential, knowing when you can put provisos on information. We had many questions. Send in more now. 9 to noon at rnz.co.nz or text to 2101. Karen, first, can you just help us with what's happened since we last spoke? A member's bill pulled from the ballot is one thing, but when a government takes on that bill, obviously its chances of passing rise. Are there many changes between what was in the members' bill and what the Commerce Minister, Andrew Bailey, has announced?
Not as far as I'm aware, Catherine, and I'm delighted that the Minister's picked this up, because the thing is that, as you say, there's more chance of actually getting it through. And his intention is that this will be enacted by the end of the year. So in terms of where it's been, you know, 26 years from a recommendation by the Law Commission when I was only about 15. No, that's not quite true. But, you know, we've been waiting for so long for this. And the game changer, and I think, you know, in terms of using that analogy, the game changer is in terms of what a consumer will tell an insurer and what the obligation is. So in the new bill that we're looking at the moment, a policyholder must take reasonable care not to misrepresent the situation. So that's a long way away from actually understanding what a prudent insurer would want to know.
That prudent insurer test, as we spoke about last time, I mean, I don't go to my heart surgeon and expect to be able to tell them what a prudent heart surgeon should know.
No.
The threshold was very high, and the question was always, it's on the prudent insurer to elicit that information. Reasonable care, then, as a consumer test, means what? It is not a free pass. What would it mean in the sorts of cases you come across?
Well, it means that what we would be looking at is, what did the consumer know? What were the questions asked? And this is a big thing too in this new bill. The onus is more on the insurer to ask the right questions and to have very clear, specific wording in their policies. And so what the consumer then needs to do is to make sure that they don't actually tell fibs or white lies or try and deliberately avoid answering a question. If they simply give the information and they do it in good faith and they're not deliberately trying to misrepresent the situation, then the insurer should be able to address any discrepancies at a later date by saying, well, if we would have put an exclusion on because you forgot about that situation, if we would have charged a higher premium because we didn't know about that, but you only forgot to tell us, you didn't deliberately not tell us, then we will impose a higher premium or we would put an exclusion on, but we will still pay your claim that is totally unrelated to those things that you forgot to tell us about.
Could they retrospectively elevate what you would have paid had
yes.
they known? Okay, so that's what, but it's not a carte blanche you can't have.
No.
And we talked last time about an insurance claim being unrelated to the piece of information
yep.
that you forgot or
yes.
fibbed about or
and
fudged.
Yes.
Now, does this bill make any difference, again, to the idea that carte blanche, you weren't a handy on this, so you're not having this, even though they're barely related.
No, so in this, with the new bill, if there is no causal connection, it won't matter. It's all about the information that you give to the insurer.
Right.
And if you forget, and there is no indication that you have deliberately chosen to mislead the insurer. So it's quite a high bar now. What we're talking about is fraudulent misrepresentation is the wording.
So bring us back to what does so many people in with forms, and we'll get to some questions in a moment. We mentioned earlier that the tick box forms can be very blunt. Like, I'm just sort of working from memory here. Have you ever talked to your doctor about stress? And this was a big one, because a lot of these come down sometimes to income insurance claims, say. And it seems such a big, vague, open question. And people go, well, goodness knows, in some context, whatever, a long time ago, and I've never had any issues. What should they do?
So even more sort of broad, if you like, is have you been to the doctor in the last 5 years? And if so, what for?
Who would remember? Yeah.
So the thing is that we always say, if you want to be absolutely sure, you get your medical notes. You at least make inquiry. And I think this is where most people get caught out. They guess. They don't actually make inquiries. They don't take the time. If they have somebody, you know, helping them, a financial advisor, they actually need to say, I need to go and check.
Yeah.
If the advisor isn't actually telling them to do that.
But the reasonable care thing, if that visit to the doctor did happen, and it's got no, absolutely no kind of relevance, again, would reasonable care offer some kind of protection or not? It sometimes feels, people feel like they've been caught on technicalities that really aren't relevant. And does reasonable care take account of that or not?
Well, they can't actually just ignore it. They can't be reckless. So in terms of what the new bill says, they're talking about fraudulent misrepresentation. Now, fraud is a high bar. It's higher than just, you know, telling a white lie. You've got to deliberately try and mislead the insurer. So it's quite high. Having said that, though, we often see cases, not necessarily non-disclosure cases, where people think that they can get a benefit if they fudge the truth. And we had one out of the Auckland floods where a young guy had something wrong with his car. He made a claim saying it was flood-related. There was a sort of a discussion about whether or not he kept the car or what sort of money he got. And it came out that actually he'd taken it to the mechanic before the floods. There was a problem with it. He can't get insurance for anything now. So
yeah, that's another reason this matters.
Yeah, it does.
Because once you've got a black stripe for whatever reason, good luck with any insurer anywhere.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about another matter. We talked about forms and the fact that there's little opportunity to say yes, but, or I don't know, or whatever. You made the point, now online forms you'll click and you'll go in further, but for people who've done written forms in the past, that was not really an option. So we had one person email saying, can I go to my insurer and see what I actually wrote upon application all those years ago?
Yes, you can, if they've still got them.
What would happen if you did?
Well, you can have a look at them. And the thing is that my advice to consumers is that you actually hold on to the forms. If there's any possibility of actually taking a copy of those forms, that you keep them in your records. Now, I know that people are not great at holding that sort of stuff, but it is important, and it can be very important down the track. When we look at complaints at the If So scheme, we will always look at the applications that have been made.
But could this person sort of intimating, I'm not sure now about what I wrote all years ago.
Yeah.
But, and what would an insurer's response been if you turned up and said, can I have a look at that?
Well, in most cases, if they've still got the forms, that there shouldn't be a problem with them giving them to the person who's filled it in.
And can you amend it if you think actually on reflection?
Yeah, you could. You couldn't amend that form, but you could then provide information to the insurer, and it might mean that they put an exclusion on, or it might mean that they did something else. But if you then made a claim at a later date for something that was unrelated, under the current law, then of course you've made disclosure.
Right. So that would actually be protective.
That would be protective.
Okay, interesting. Yeah. Another one that came in from listeners at that time. We recently had to use life insurance for a family member. When we took it out, the broker had a responsibility to make sure we were on the best insurance possible, but comparison was what we could afford versus the best insurance available. But shouldn't comparison be more like what insurance we could afford versus not having it at all?
Okay, so this is all really about your financial advice. And for the last couple of years, brokers and financial advisors have been governed by a code of professional conduct. And it means that they have to put their clients first. So if it's the right thing for the client at the time, then that's the information that they have to give. If there is any difficulty with that, then the client can ask for something to be done about it and challenge the advice that was given.
This one stopped me in my tracks. We just took out online travel insurance. It was exactly what you're talking about. A list of medical conditions to choose from, none of which included the one we needed. If we'd left it blank, our whole policy would have been void. But when calling the company, we had to pick the nearest condition and were asked the same questions as online. It assumes now that my husband only has one kidney, whereas in fact he has two perfectly functioning ones. Frustrating not to be able to type in the actual condition.
So in that case, I would strongly recommend that they actually have a conversation with the insurer. Often there are insurers who, in terms of the travel policies, who have a medical sort of branch as well, and that if there is an indication that there's a medical condition that needs to be looked at, then that medical division will look at it and arrange terms.
She said, though, she called the company, she or he. I'm presuming. Actually, it is a woman. I've got a name. We called the company. We had to pick the nearest condition.
That doesn't sound right, but I don't know. It depends on the policy. It depends on the insurer.
I'd be going for another insurer,
I would be asking more questions okay. Because that's not good.
Another here says, what is an ordinary consumer, quote unquote? And any provisions for someone with something like ADHD, the forms and process are incredibly challenging. Was ordinary consumer part of Duncan Webb's bill? I'm just trying to think of the context that we use there.
It's a legal thing, really, in terms of looking at ordinary consumers. You want to get policies in place that most people can understand if they choose to read them, but you don't see the word ordinary in the bill. So it's not about ordinary people, it's about reasonable people, basically.
All right.
And there are matters that can be taken into account in terms of communication and everything else. So I think that if you had a consumer with vulnerabilities, then particularly under the new legislation, you know, COFI, that's something that insurers have to take into consideration.
Could people get retrospective payments under this legislation is the question.
Yeah, probably not.
Because retrospectivity is very rare in legislation. Another I would love an answer, says this person. What are my obligations as far as cleaning chimney flue to qualify for full cover if my house burns down?
Okay, so that's a reasonable care question. It's a good one because reasonable care is brilliant. Love it. You have to take reasonable care of your property, basically, and there will always be a condition in policies about that. What it means is that some people can be negligent from time to time or do silly things, but insurance is meant to cover that. If you are grossly negligent or grossly careless, you do something that nobody thinking about it would do, or you do it because you think, oh, it doesn't matter because I've got insurance, that's where your problem comes in. If you know that your flue is chocker with soot and you know that you really need to get round to cleaning it, but you don't bother, that I think is tipping over into being reckless because you think, oh, well, if I have a fire, the insurance will cover it. That's a bad idea and you're unlikely to be covered in the event of a fire.
Another, I have had health insurance since I was a baby, about to undergo genetic testing as part of fertility treatment. What do I have to disclose? Got existing health insurance.
If you've
got
existing,
anything.
Well, no. If you've got existing health insurance, disclosure is, and this is, I think, where consumers do get confused. If it's a life insurance policy and health related, if it's a health policy, there is usually not an obligation to annually disclose because there is no annual renewal as such. Whereas in house contents motor vehicle policies, they renew every year. So if you've had a speeding ticket, for example, before the next renewal, then that's something you need to disclose. But a health condition, if you've had a policy since you were a baby, no.
This super quickly, because we covered this last time, why not just include the option of providing access to medical records? You actually recommend
that's
but insurance
idea.
Companies often... Well,
no.
Actually, the people trying to sell you the insurance often push back on that.
Yeah.
But you can say, take my records.
Because the insurer's then on notice. If they have the ability to look at the records and they choose not to, if they find something at a later date, but they've got your records... on their records, then they can't say they didn't know about it.
And another here, what are my obligations on that? We've done that one. Okay, this person, many years ago on a proposal when disclosing medical history, I wrote the following. This is the full history so far as I can recall. The insurer is welcome to check with medical advisors if I've overlooked any issues.
No, they don't. So I think a lot of people get caught out on that, and there's usually a little sort of tag on the declaration that says we may look at your medical records. Unless you put them on notice that there's something there to look at, insurers will not just go ahead and look. And I think that raises one really important thing, and if your listeners don't listen to anything else today, Catherine, I want them to understand that they need to read things so that even if the policy looks a bit daunting, they really do need to read stuff to understand what the cover is.
Finally, one last question. How much onus of responsibility is held with the insurance broker as the go-between? That's a fair question, because they want to sell a policy.
Yes.
You talked about needing to take time. Is there any responsibility on the insurance broker?
Oh, there's lots. But, and here we go again. So at New Zealand law, the insurance broker or the financial advisor is acting on behalf of the consumer, the customer. They are not acting on behalf of the insurer. So it's your responsibility to make sure that you communicate with your advisor. And if they get something wrong, they all have to belong to an approved dispute resolution scheme. And if you're not happy, you can make a complaint.
Thank you so much. Karen Stevens is the insurance ombudsman. We'll keep an eye on how that bill progresses.